Hey, 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 everybody. Welcome back to Utah Places and Traces, your favorite podcast about the state with six corners. We are back after a long time, and unfortunately, I'm just by myself here today. Just lonely Isaac here. Casey and Jake are, well, we're all busy folks, but I'm the one with the recording gear, so I figured I may as well just get things going back up. It's been a long time, and we really want to be making more episodes, but it's just hard to with children. Jake did have a second child. He's a super cute little guy, and we're super happy for them. So with that, obviously, time's cut down, and Jake and I, we've been, since the hiatus, we've actually started playing together in a music group again. It had been a while since we played music together, going back a couple of years, but here we are together, finally playing music together again, and we love it. Casey started her first big girl job, as it were, at the district attorney's office here in Utah. So she's a hardworking woman, and she's doing her duty. She's using her that big brain of hers. So with the fall season approaching here today, I thought I'd go into, well, I say that, but this has nothing to do with the fall season. I wanted to talk a little bit about Antelope Island today. This is one of those locations in Utah that I think everyone has heard about, everyone knows of, but not a lot of people have actually been there. And Casey and I, we actually had the opportunity to go just a couple of months ago. We really liked it. It's a really interesting place where you can hike. well, yeah, you can hike. You can drive around the road. You can see some buffalo. You can visit the old historic farm and kind of just be there. Like, I'm not trying to downplay it at all. It's a interesting place, and I've definitely got a lot to say about it regarding its history and just other things you can do there. But it's definitely not the most exciting place, I'll be honest. If you're a local, I would say for sure go. I mean, if you've been to all the national parks, you're looking for something new to do, go check it out. Just right off the bat, I'd recommend it. It's a cool place, especially if you like seeing buffalo. So as I'm by myself here today, I hope I don't bore you out with my voice. I'm definitely not the most engaging of a talker. Yeah, Casey and Jake are usually the brains of this podcast, and they're the ones who are able to formulate sentences much better and more eloquently than I can. But we're going to give it a best shot because we want to get this podcast up and rolling again. We think there's a lot of information here that Utahns and visitors of our state would want to know. And I think Antelope Island is one of those that people are hopefully going to enjoy hearing and learning more about. So, all right. So Antelope Island is the largest island in the Great Salt Lake. Unfortunately, it's not really an island anymore. The water in the Great Salt Lake has dried up and, well, not all of it, but a lot of it has dried up and the lake has shrunk significantly the past decades. So Antelope Island is no longer really an island. As you drive out through the causeway, you might notice some water, but not a lot. And I think it might vary depending on the season, but for the most part, it's not an island. I think if you really wanted to, you could walk out to it. It's 42 square miles in total, which actually is about the size of San Francisco. So this is not a small island. It's not a small area, I should say. I'll just be calling it an island for reference and for namesake. So yeah, it's pretty big. And when you go there, you can immediately see how big it is. And in and of itself, the whole area is dedicated as a recreational area where you can go hike, you can have picnics, you can visit the sites, you can see the buffalo, whatever you want. But it is that dedicated area by the state. And depending on the water levels, like I mentioned earlier, depending on the water levels of the Salt Lake, which does change a lot seasonally, sometimes you can walk to the island. It is sometimes properly surrounded by water, but climate change and water usage have definitely made the lake levels pretty unpredictable. And this is a whole other episode that we want to get to about the Great Salt Lake and water conservation and things around that topic, but that'll be another topic for another day. So the island got its name because there used to be a lot of antelope there, specifically the pronghorn antelope. The pronghorns are not actually antelope. They're more closely related to giraffes. So these are animals that were there quite a long time ago. To be quite honest, I'm not sure who named it that, but whoever did saw these creatures there that are no longer there, unfortunately. But that's where it gets its name. It should be renamed Buffalo Island, in my opinion, because those are the cool animals you can see there. So let's go back a lot further. Before white settlers showed up in Utah, in the area, and started naming things, this area was actually home to a lot of different Native American tribes, primarily the Shoshone and Utes, and they knew what was up with this island. So for thousands of years, these tribes would use the island seasonally. They'd come out to hunt and gather food and basically just use it as we use it in a lot of ways, honestly, just an amazing nature reserve. The lake itself was super important too, because even though you can't drink the salt water, the area around it had fresh springs and tons of wildlife. So it was just a place where life could thrive for animals and humans. So the Shoshone, one of the tribes that populated the area, the Shoshone called the lake Titsapa. That's terrible pronunciation, I'm sure. Titsapa, Titsapa, which basically means bad water for obvious reasons. Because, you know, it's saltier than the ocean and you definitely don't want to drink it. What's really cool is that there are still archaeological sites on the island. So you can find grinding stones where Native Americans process seeds and other foods. The park services protect these sites, so don't go treasure hunting or anything. But it's incredible to think that some people used this place for literally thousands of years before it was taken over by white settlers and pioneers before it came to state park. Okay, so fast forward to the 1840s. Here come the Mormon pioneers. As usual for a lot of our episodes. So Brigham Young and his crew they're scouting out the surrounding regions of Salt Lake, the valley, and up towards the lake. And they say, or someone has this idea of putting animals there. I would assume, and this is something I should have done my research on, but I would assume there were no big animals out there. Those giraffes must have been extinct by then. But anyways, one of them says, hey, what if we put animals out here? So in the 1840s and 50s, they start using Antelope Island basically as a giant corral. So it's surrounded by salt water. It's a natural corral. You can throw big animals on there. And they're not going anywhere. So it really is the ultimate free-range situation for these animals. Another interesting thing that's out there that's fun to see is the Fielding Garr Ranch. That's G-A-R-R. And this was established on the island in 1848, right after the pioneers settled the valley. And this is where things get interesting. So this wasn't just some random farm. This actually became one of the most successful ranching operations in the Utah Territory. So they had cattle, sheep, horses, a lot of other livestock. The ranch house that's still there today was built in the 1870s, and it's actually one of the oldest Anglo structures still standing in Utah. Quite cool. And again, I mentioned that Casey and I, we got to go out here to check this out, and the farm was really cool. We enjoyed seeing the old architecture and just kind of the history of the region. So yeah, it's really cool. It's absolutely a relic of Utah history. So what blows my mind here about these pioneer ranchers is that they were so isolated. Like, imagine your nearest neighbor being a boat ride across the Salt Lake and down in, what would that be? Farmington, Clearfield, kind of that region. I think I need to look at a map again. But hey, the people that worked out here, they made it work. They had to be completely self-sufficient. They grew their own food, raised their own animals, and they probably went a little stir crazy during the winter months, I can imagine. But they did take shifts. I know that the people that worked out here would work out in shifts, and there were some permanent families, though, that lived there. So the Garr family, which the ranch is named after, they ran cattle and sheep operations that were really successful. The island's natural grasses were perfect for grazing, and since the animals couldn't wander off, they didn't have to worry about losing any livestock, and there were no predators out there, so it was pretty genius. So here's where the story gets cool. You know how American bison / buffalo were almost completely wiped out in the late 1800s or something like that? So we went from, again, we went in the Western U.S., we went from like millions of bison / buffalo to maybe a few hundred in the entire country because of the Western expansion. They just killed buffalo after buffalo without really any regard. So it's one of those historical disasters that makes you just kind of shake your head. But so in 1893, William Glassman and a couple of his contemporaries, they were well aware of this bison epidemic and they wanted to do something about it. So what they did is they ended up buying 12 buffalo from back east and they had them shipped by train out to Salt Lake City. Then they put them all on a boat and they took them out to Antelope Island and they let them free. So that's why we have buffalo out there today. That's kind of how the whole thing got started and why we have that little mini buffalo sanctuary out there. Yeah, I can't really imagine being the guy who had to load all these buffalo onto a boat and then ship them out. I'm not sure buffalo are very used to being on water. They were probably not very happy about it, but hey, they made it out there and there's a thriving colony. So those 12 bison became the foundation of what is now the largest free-roaming bison herd in the United States. But hey, they did it. So these 12 bison that they initially bought, they became the foundation of what is now this corral that they have, this free-roaming colony. And it is actually one of the biggest free-roaming buffalo herds in the United States. So that's pretty cool. Today, there's usually between 550 to 700 bison on the island at any given time. So depending on the year and just management decisions, I'm sure. So this brings me to one of the coolest things that happens on the island every year. This is the Buffalo Roundup. So every October or November, hey, I guess this is why the episode is relevant here in the fall season. So every October or November, they round up the entire herd. And we're talking cowboys on horsebacks. We've got helicopters, ATVs, volunteers, everything. And it's like something out of an Old West movie. So I've actually never seen it in person, but I have seen videos of it. It's really cool. It's kind of like watching sheep herding, but with buffalo. And it's just way more extreme. So yeah, they do this to check the health of the animals, to vaccinate them, and manage the herd sizes, because bison are incredibly successful breeders, and so when they're healthy and when they have enough food. So left to their own devices, they probably will end up overpopulating the island. So this yearly buffalo herding wellness check is also to control the population size. So they keep the herd at a sustainable size. The extra bison gets sold to other conservation programs. They get sold to Native American tribes and sometimes to private ranchers. So it's actually a really important conservation success story. So that's one thing that I actually really thought was cool about what they're doing out on Antelope Island with the buffalo. So you can go watch the roundup if you want. They make it a public event and it's apparently crazy to see. So you can go watch the roundup if you want. It is a public event. I've never seen it myself. We might actually get this marked on our calendars, go and check it out this year. I'm just looking at the information right now on the site, and it says that the Buffalo Roundup is set to take place on Saturday, October 25th this year. Take your kids, family, friends, go and see it. Go and support some of Utah's history and culture. All right, so outside of the history and the cool buffalo, what else can you actually do there? So what is there to actually do on Antelope Island? Now, it's not the Wasatch Mountains or anything, but it's its own unique landscape with its own fun adventures and challenges. So like I mentioned earlier, if you want to get there, you're getting off the freeway around Hill Air Force Base, the Clearfield region, and you're driving out through the causeway straight onto the island. So the only entrance you can get there from is the northern tip, and that'll get you onto the main road, which goes down all the way down to the Fielding Gar Ranch that I mentioned earlier. And I think some of the smaller roads continue a lot further down to the southern tip of the island. But that's the only road you really have. It's just that long north, the long north to south road on the east side of the island. So once you get there, though, there are tons of turnoffs. There's tons of hikes. You can literally drive down the road and stop where you want, and you'll find some of the cool trails. And all of those are on All Trails if you have that app. So yeah, tons of cool stuff. And you can hike to the tip, to the summit of the highest peak, which is called Frary Peak. And that's something I haven't had the chance to do yet. When Casey and I went out there, we were with our kid, Magnus, and he was still pretty young and feeling a little sick that day, so we didn't want to go too hard. But there was a lot of people out there hiking. It's a really, really cool location. And the scenery, like I said, super cool. So we actually walked out to the west side of the island and went to the coastline, and we just kind of walked across some little salt flat areas for a while, just explored. It was really cool though. But yeah, kind of just looking at the information, so the Frary Peak that I mentioned, the highest point, that is 6,500 feet in elevation. And just based off the information I'm reading here, the hike gives you some really, really cool views. On a clear day, you can see 5 different mountain ranges. The trail is only 3 miles long, so it's not that crazy. The Lakeside Trail is one of the more casual ones. This is one we actually did a part of, not the full thing, but it's a casual kind of just flat walk that you can do if you're not into anything super intense. And this is where you get to appreciate how weird the Great Salt Lake is. So the water is so salty, you literally can't sink in it. And for those of you who have lived around salt lakes, or if you know anything about the Great Salt Lake, that's one of the cool features of it. When you get into salt water, you don't sink. You can just float on it. You can do back float, belly float, whatever you want. So that's kind of cool. And way back when, let's see, I actually don't know when this was, but there was this resort called Saltaire. And Saltaire it's kind of like a lakeside resort and hotel that Utahns would stay at, and visitors, I'm sure. But they would stay at this and they would go swimming in the water. It's kind of crazy for me as a local to think about people just swimming in the Great Salt Lake. It seems like this gross kind of undesirable place to swim in, but people did it. And I'm sure that the little gimmick of floating in the water was kind of fun, what drew people a lot in. So anyways, I digress. Another popular spot we have here is Buffalo Point. This is just essentially a scenic overlook where you are usually guaranteed to see some bison, especially in the morning or late afternoon when they come down to drink from the freshwater springs. But I think if you go to the island, you're guaranteed to see bison no matter where you go. Casey and I actually got stopped on the side of the road for a solid 30 minutes as a huge herd of them was crossing the road. So we had them walking right by our car. It's pretty cool. It's a little freaky, but it was cool. I did have this written down. So I was talking about the salt percentages in the Great Salt Lake, and I overshot it by quite a bit here. So the Salt Lake itself is about 12% salinity or saltiness in some areas. And I think that's about the max you're going to get, which is a lot when you're comparing to the ocean's 3% salinity levels. So the Great Salt Lake is extremely salty, which means nothing can live in the Salt Lake except for brine shrimp and some types of algae, but that's about it. And so brine shrimp, they support millions of migratory birds. So the Great Salt Lake is actually one of the most important stops on the Pacific Flyway. This is something that I didn't know because of these brine shrimp. So you get these massive flocks of birds that come through. You get pelicans, seagulls, avocets, is that what they're called? Stilts, all kinds of shorebirds. And it's one of the most important bird areas in the Western United States. They feed off of these brine shrimp. Another cool thing about the brine shrimp is, again, in the fall time of year, October-ish, November, in these really shallow regions of the Great Salt Lake, you're going to get this pink coloration. And this is where photographers and drone operators flock to around this time, because you can get some really incredible otherworldly photographs and views of this pink, kind of like a neon pink tint to the water. And so you'll have causeways and areas on the shoreline where the water is just neon pink. Super, super cool. That's something I've wanted to go and check out and fly a drone over for some time now. So maybe this fall is going to have to be the time to do it. All right. The island, let's see. So the island also has this population of bighorn sheep that were reintroduced in the 1990s. So a little more recently. Let's see, what else is there? There's wild horses. Not exactly sure how they got there, but I tried to look up what the origins were for wild horses, but I couldn't find anything. They have been roaming the island for decades, though. Oh, and there is something that always trips people out. There are virtually no trees on the island, and this always calls me back to my favorite country of Iceland. Not a lot of trees there. But this is one of the commonalities that Antelope Island shares. There are basically no naturally growing trees. There's tons of trees around the ranch where those farmers were for decades. But those were obviously planted by the settlers there. So naturally growing, not really any trees. It's essentially just a grasslands ecosystem, which is super rare in Utah, actually. Most of the state is either forested or mountains or desert, but Antelope Island is this weird in-between grassland habitat. So the lack of trees essentially just means these huge unobstructed views and some of the most dramatic sunsets you'll ever see. It's pretty cool. The light does reflect off the lake and the mountains, and the whole landscape glows. It's pretty incredible. So again, if you're a photographer, there is a lot to see out here, especially in the fall months. So I'm just going to touch on kind of what I alluded to earlier on in the effects that climate change is having on the Great Salt Lake. So, and we're going to do a much more in-depth episode on the state of the Great Salt Lake and kind of the movements that are being created or that need to be created in order to help it survive. So just as a little teaser, right now what's super concerning is that the Great Salt Lake is shrinking dramatically. Climate change, like I mentioned, drought, water diversions, for agriculture in particular is one of the bigger ones. And cities that have dropped the lake, and cities and city water usage has dropped the lake into some of the lowest levels ever recorded. A couple of years ago, I think it was the fall, winter of 2023, that we had a ton of snow. Randomly a lot of snow, and that raised the lake's level quite a bit, but it's kind of decreased and rapidly gone back down. So this affects everything, though. When the lake gets smaller, the island becomes more like a peninsula. The ecosystem changes. The salt gets more concentrated, which affects the brine shrimp as well, which also affects the birds. So it's this whole cascade effect. There's also the concern of dust storms. I know a lot of news sources have touched on this, but when parts of the lake bed are exposed, you get these massive dust storms that can affect air quality in the Salt Lake region and further. So some of the dust storms actually contain arsenic and other heavy metals, which is obviously not great. And one of the reasons why conserving the Great Salt Lake means conserving life. That's very hyperbolic, but conserving the Great Salt Lake in turn conserves our quality of life on the Wasatch Front. So, the state of Utah is trying to figure out some solutions, but it's extremely complicated. People need water for drinking, farming and industry. Like, we have to use water, but the lake ecosystem also needs the water. So it's one of those environmental challenges that doesn't really have an easy answer. We're going to go a lot more in depth into that into one of our upcoming episodes here, but hopefully we'll have Jake and Casey back on that one. All right, so I digress. Let's get out of the sad, heavy, scary stuff. If you want to go visit Antelope Island, and honestly, you should, So if you want to visit Antelope Island, and honestly, I'd recommend it, here's what you need to know. There is an entrance fee. I think it's like 10 bucks or something per vehicle. But you can camp there, which would be awesome for stargazing, I'm sure. And the best time to visit is probably, honestly, I'm going to say the fall. I think we would have gone in the fall last year. Anyways, fall is going to be a cool time to go, especially if you want to go and see the brine shrimp, the cool coloration of the water. Winter can also be beautiful, but it is cold and windy out there. So bring water, sunscreen, bug spray. Bugs can be really, really bad, almost apocalyptic. So be careful out there. So I didn't mention this, but there is a visitor center out there. The center actually has some cool exhibits about the history and ecology of the island. The old Fieldingar Ranch is one of the main things that you should for sure go and see. You can tour it, which is pretty neat if you're into history, so or pioneer history specifically. So there you have it, Antelope Island, this weird, wonderful, historically significant, ecologically important, visually stunning place that a lot of people have never heard of. So if you're a local, absolutely go and check it out. I think it's a cool part of our state's history and ecosystem. And it's a cool part of our state's natural wonders. So go and check it out and go and get yourself educated on the Great Salt Lake and some of those issues surrounding it. And if you're a tourist, if you're visiting Utah, if you're driving north or south on I-15, stop by and check it out. It's worth the visit. So it's got Native American history, got pioneer ranching, it's got conservation success stories, and some of the most unique landscapes in the United States. Well, anyways, I hope you were able to bear with me here on this solo episode. I hope that we don't have to resort to doing more of these solo episodes. I know you guys like to hear the conversation between Jake and Casey and myself, and obviously, like I've mentioned, they are the smart ones on this podcast. They're the ones who have the voices and the knowledge. I'm kind of just the guy who likes to add in a thought here or there. But thanks for listening and sticking with me. We're going to be coming out with some new episodes throughout the fall season. Some episodes I'm really excited about. Like I mentioned, the episode about Great Salt Lake. We're getting working on that. And another one about Skinwalker Ranch. This is one that Casey's probably going to have to sit out on because she's from the Uinta Basin area out in Vernal, and Skinwalker Ranch really hits home to those people, so I can get it, they're, you know, it's kind of a freaky thing, but perfect for the spooky season. Talk a little bit about Skinwalker Ranch. So stay tuned, folks, and thanks for listening. See ya.